What's up, everybody? It's Vito Presso with Man's Greatest Adventure. Hope you're doing good today. Today we have on my good friend, Russ Franceschina. It's a wicked last name. Dude's awesome. He is an architect and just a great man. Ultra runner, whatever you call it. He's completed 2 full Ironmans. So ladies and gentlemen, we have the Ironman himself on today. He talks a lot about what it takes to be a man and to be able to complete Ironmans, which are a pretty impressive feat. But he actually, I ask him, you know, what his definition of manliness is, and he breaks it down into a very a cool way. It's a very interesting way, and there's a lot of value here, as a lot of our guests offer. And I just hope you guys get a lot out of it. And if you like it, please rate us on whatever you're listening to us on, iTunes, Spotify, whatever. And share it. Share. Sharing is caring. Caring is fun. Share it with everyone you know, people who you think will benefit from it. And I hope that if you do get something out of it, that you'll reach out to me and just let me know. That's why we do this. I don't make money on this. This isn't for profit or anything. I make $0, but it is so fulfilling to hear when people walk up to me and they're like, yo, I heard your podcast. That guy was awesome. Amazing story. Really needed to hear that. And so please reach out to me. Leave comments. My Instagram's at VitoPresta. You can reach me out. My website, VitoPresta.com. Whatever it is, just reach out, share, and enjoy. Let's go. All right, Russ, you there?
I am here.
Beautiful. What's up, everybody? Okay, Russ, you've listened to the podcast a couple times, and basically what I like to start with is, I used to end with it, but I'm going to start with it. How do you define manliness?
Oh, yeah. I heard that question a couple times, so some good definitions. And I actually brought notes.
Oh,
I came
did.
Prepared.
There
yeah,
you go.
I thought about this because I knew you were going to ask me that. So I actually created an acronym for this. So
okay.
So I'll just go through a couple quick points. So
go for it.
Number one, M for manly, right? It's I think even especially in today's culture, the one thing that I think we fight against in being a man is we've been told that masculinity is not something we should be excited about, or something that we should necessarily you know, uphold as a value. And I think that's wrong. I think, you know, we're created as masculine creatures, as men. We're created to be strong, and we should really capture that in our beings. You know, that should definitely be something that's part of us as men. You know, we shouldn't be afraid or apologize for being masculine. Mm. Number two is A, and I think all men are built for adventure. Like there's something about adventure and just reaching for goals or reaching for something that's exciting, and we're all looking for that, and I think we have to continue on that path as men. And this one comes from my dad in college. I was having a really rough time 1 year in college, and my dad, I think he sensed it, he knew it. And I didn't get many letters from my parents, or, you know, many gift boxes from my mom when I was in college. But I get this letter from my dad once, and all it is, I open it up, and there's this 8.5 by 11 sheet in there, and there's a picture of a frog being swallowed by a pelican head first in this pelican's mouth. But the frog has his hands around the pelican's neck, strangling the pelican as this pelican is trying to eat it. And all it says at the bottom, it says, never give up.
Huh.
So that's what the N is in manly.
Never give up.
Yeah, we just keep plowing ahead. Like, we are called to step up and to not give up. L, I think this is one that's probably a lot of guys, you know, we think, oh, we're tough men, and, you know, we can't feel emotions. Love, I think, As men, we are supposed to love and humbly love people in every aspect of our lives. We can be tough and we can be loving at the same time. There's no doubt we can do that. And then why? This one's a little interesting. I put the word yoke for why. And yoke, it's used in the Bible as well. It describes, when Jesus says, "Take my yoke," and it's really that Jesus is helping you and leading you. And what they would do when they would plow a field is they would put an old ox with a young ox to teach the young ox. And the whole idea is that this old ox, this strong old ox, can pull that yoke on that plow all by itself. Mm-hmm. So the young ox is learning from the old ox. They're the mentee and the mentor. And I think as men, part of being manly is you always hear that cliche thing about, "Oh, I never asked for directions."
Yeah,
stupidest thing ever. You're so proud that you'd just rather drive around or walk around for hours than to actually get where you're going and be purposeful about what you're doing.
Yeah, right.
Just because you can't ask for directions.
Yeah.
We need to yoke ourselves. And then as we get older, we need to be the one yoking other young men along. We need to be that mentor and mentee relationship. And we shouldn't be afraid to ask questions or ask for help, because that's going to make us better.
Yeah.
It's going to make us better, wiser, stronger, everything, right? We need to learn from others.
Yeah.
We should not be afraid to ask. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, let's break these down even further.
Sure.
I took notes because that's... I think those are all great qualities, but when you were saying the M, right, of manly,
mm-hmm.
is to being manly, it is so weird that in today's culture, at least for our country, that it's like, it's a negative thing, or it's viewed as negatively to be manly.
Yeah.
And this, I heard something that where it's like feminine is the future is feminine. There's nothing wrong with femininity, but there's also the balance of masculinity.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
But there's this thing going on where it's like, no, manliness isn't a thing. And so toxic masculinity, right?
Yeah.
That's popular now where it's, and it exists. We've talked about it on the podcast before, mm-hmm. where it's like, yeah, the whole idea where you can't ask for directions, that you got to be this guy who could punch a hole in the wall or whatever. It's like, obviously that's stupid. Like, let's evolve as men. Let's grow up and move forward. But I feel like it's dangerous that masculinity or being manly is viewed as negatively.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But how do you think we got here?
I think there's these cultural norms that get developed, and and unfortunately, I think people buy into those ideas. And in today's culture, we're so, especially in this Western American culture, where everybody is offended, or everybody is upset, or everybody wants to claim some sort of victimhood. It's easy to point fingers at larger scale topics, So in some eyes, people see masculinity as a threat, mm-hmm. And when it really isn't, we can create dozens of words that describe anything that makes them sound horrible.
Right.
But the truth is that it's not. We should celebrate femininity. We should celebrate masculinity. We should celebrate all those characteristics, and we shouldn't be afraid to be one or the other, and to actually say that's okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to play devil's advocate, I'd say, I think as men in the past, so beyond before we were around, let's say, there was that abuse of power,
mm-hmm.
right? Where like women didn't even have the right to vote,
mm-hmm.
like ridiculous stuff that's obviously wrong. It's not. Yeah. So I think what's happening now is it's catching up,
mm-hmm.
right? And with the swing of the pendulum, before it was women don't have the right to vote, to now their momentum's coming to like, oh, we're realizing that obviously we're all equal as humans, but now I feel like it's swinging the opposite direction where it's like, not payback, but almost like, well, we need to make up for all the stuff that we put women through in the past. But the thing is, like, it wasn't healthy for men to do it. It's not healthy for women to do it. And we're in that stage where it's swinging to the feminine side,
mm-hmm.
which is fine. But then what does that mean? What does that mean for our society? What does that mean for our future children? Let's say when, as a man, we do have higher testosterone and we do have an urge to be more physical or to be mm-hmm. stronger or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to suppress that.
Yeah.
I mean, even look at cultures where, like, in America, sex is, like, taboo and it's not, like, it's not okay. And to see nude, like, there's no nude beaches or whatever. But there's so much sexual violence and there's so much rape and there's so much, like,
mm-hmm.
disgusting stuff that men do because that part of them is so suppressed and looked down upon. Where in other cultures, when, like, in Europe, where sex is free and everyone's, like, very physical and lovey-dovey or whatever, it doesn't happen as much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. You just unpacked a lot right there.
Well, that's what I'm saying, you know, but it's stuff that we need to talk about, though. I mean, even look at all the mass shootings, all men.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just suppressed, obviously, mental illness, whatever, but it's that suppressed energy that we're no longer allowed to give out because we could lose our job or we can be shunned at our wherever.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it goes back to kind of one of the very first things that you stated is, and I think this is where it people struggle with it, is, you know, equal rights do not mean that we're equal. In all senses, right? Like, let's face it. You and I aren't equal. You're taller than me. Should I be offended or upset or make you get some height reduction surgery to manipulate your body so you and I can be equal?
Right.
That's just crazy thinking. That's not. There's nothing plausible about that. Like, why? So, you know, you get a better tan than I might get. Now, that's unfair. Well, no, that we're uniquely different in so many different ways. There is no other Vito Presta. There is none. Your DNA, your makeup, your body, your height, the way you think, the way your body is wired and your physical nature, everything about you is uniquely different. So why is it then that we associate equal rights to being equal in all aspects?
Yeah.
We're not equal in all aspects. You know, you could probably beat me in an arm wrestling competition. I can most likely still outrun you.
Yeah.
Most likely.
When you're running Iron Man and stuff, yeah, I would say, yeah.
So we're not equal, but the conversation is this type of unilateral equality. And when we start saying that means that, well, if we're masculine, we need to be either less masculine or the feminine need to become more masculine. So we inevitably meet somewhere in the middle of being equal in that sense. And we're not. It'll never be the same. So I think, if you go back to the beginning of it, that piece alone is I think, part of the challenge there is that we're really, you know, no individual is the same or equal in that sense.
Yeah.
But we can have the same rights, the same, we should all be treated the same when it comes to voting and, you know, the job that I work with X amount of experience should be rewarded the same as anybody mm-hmm. else, you know, working that job with the same amount of experience. You know, and that's a whole nother conversation in regards to finances and business and things like that, that are all associated. There's so many other impacts in that, but just in related to manliness and, you know, and being able to celebrate that and take a hold of it is something that we're unique. And in the same sense, well, you know, there's a feminine side to men,
right,
that we'll never get or know or experience. I mean, we'll never understand what it's like to bear a child.
Oh yeah,
right. So,
but that's not something that we would like. It's unfair. Like, well, we want science to speed up so we can give birth. But I think what you were getting at or leaning towards, what it sounded like at least, was that we need to change the conversation, right? So it's not that the manliness is bad, but it's that we should all celebrate our individuality mm-hmm. and our individual uniqueness. And I should celebrate that our differences, but then as men and women, we should celebrate our differences as well. And also along with that, realize we are equal as humans.
Mm-hmm.
We are all humans. We are all children of God.
Absolutely.
And also, I'm not even going to say, but, and also we are also created differently.
Correct.
So it's not, if I'm built to be
the guy from, do you watch Game of Thrones?
No.
Okay. Well, there's this guy. He's like 7-something from Norway, or he's like a Viking, 400 pounds, 500 pounds, pure muscle, huge. Well, I'm not going to, like, he was built that way. Let's celebrate him as that and allow him to be whatever he needs to be in order to be his best self. And if there's a man too who's shorter and skinnier and not as muscular, but is a beautiful pianist or whatever, well, let's celebrate him and that he's not as physical, but
absolutely
he's there.
Yeah.
But we need this. I think what you're saying, the solution to this whole, like, men are looked, being manly is looked, is frowned upon. Well, as men, I think we need to step up and say, obviously in the past it was wrong, but we're here not to say who's better, who's worse, but to celebrate each other as humans and allow each other to live. Because no one, I think the whole thing is like a power struggle. We don't, women don't want to be overpowered by men, and I get it. And it, there is a physical aspect and it's scary, but we should celebrate each other so that the women know they have nothing to fear.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
It's our job as men to say, hey, you're afraid to walk down the street. That's my fault. Like, that's my problem.
Yeah.
But I'm going to celebrate you to the point where you don't feel that way. Where you can yell at me and not feel like I'm going to hit you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, again, it's not apologizing for being masculine, but if you go back to my acronym, let's skip a few. If you go down to the love part, you know, how can you be masculine and still love and care for people and be tender and have emotions that connect with people, whether it's in a sentimental way or a grieving way? You know, we should be able to have all of that while being masculine. Yeah. Therefore, the end result is people aren't fearful of us. Women aren't fearful of that. Women trust you. Women want you by their side because they know this man is going to, he would do anything to protect me and be there for me. He's going to care for me. You know, and that's a benefit that he's masculine, that he can do that. You know, that's using my unique parts that God has given to me in conjunction with a woman's unique parts that have been given to her to create an even more successful team in marriage, you know, in a marriage relationship.
Yeah.
So,
well, even, I mean, taking that love aspect even to strangers or people who you wouldn't normally, or people you don't even relate to at all. Like, what if we, every morning, were forced to focus on how we can love our neighbor or how we can just incorporate more love as men into our lives than when we're doing business or if we're competing, if we're whatever, we can still compete and I could still kick your ass on the field. But, like, I love you enough to respect you and to not, like, take it personally or to allow my ego to get involved because of that love there. Well, that would change everything.
It would. It would. Absolutely.
How do we do that? Teach us, Russ. How do we
I don't have, love into our life? Trust me, I don't have the answers to all of that.
So, you, for people who are listening who don't know, you've run multiple Ironmans.
I've done a couple Ironmans.
You don't run them. You compete in them because there's different aspects.
You complete an Ironman.
Right.
So you just try to get to the finish line.
So when you're – I read this book, David Goggins' book. Have you heard of him?
No.
He's like this Navy SEAL guy who was super overweight, lost a ton. He prides himself on being like the hardest of all the hard people or being uncommon amongst uncommon men.
Okay.
But he was talking about when he runs ultramarathons that he finds people and just runs – 10 miles with them or whatever and passes time. Is that something that you've done? Or do you just like
finding just random people?
Yeah, like do you have conversations with people? And like, what are those conversations like? Are you just kind of like solo? I'm out there mind over, you know?
So like in relation to like Ironman and Ironman training, you spend a lot of time. There's a lot of time involved in the training, but unfortunately, like when you're swim training, you're just talking to yourself. It is probably the worst head game around when you're staring at that line in the bottom of the pool for like an hour and a half, just in your own brain. It can be a scary place.
Yeah.
But on the bike, I really enjoy cycling. So just being outside and just powering something with the, you know, the force of your body is, to me, it's just a beautiful thing. And I can kind of lose myself and just, you know, spend some time in prayer and just kind of enjoy the breeze and the fresh air. So cycling again, like it's you know, a lot of the training I've done would be with my wife,
okay.
and maybe a few other people. But like bike training, you know, if you're in a small group, if people are going different speeds, it's really kind of hard to stick together or really have any kind of significant conversation. Running, one of the things I loved, and I think it was the first year your mom did the marathon with our marathon team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the benefits of being, a little bit faster than most people was that we'd let everybody start, and then the faster, you know, we'd let the slow people start these long runs on Saturday and let the slow people go. And then, a few minutes later, let the next slower, a little bit faster group go, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And then it came down to me and a couple other people a lot of times that were kind of the last group, a little bit of the faster people. And the one thing I loved about that is I'd get my whole concept would be to catch up to the other runners and then run with them for a while and talk to them and encourage them and tell them how good they were doing and kind of be there for them and ask them if they needed anything, we were a captain of the team. So
yeah,
it wasn't really my duty, but it was something I really enjoyed. Because honestly, when I started running, I hated it. I couldn't stand it. Oh, absolutely. It was the worst thing ever.
How did you get started? Because how many Ironman have you completed?
Two Ironman.
And
two full Ironman.
How does one even start?
Races. So,
How do you even start? Like, where do you? Were you a runner in high school?
No. So, I didn't really play any sports growing up, believe it or not. Yeah. So, I think I played basketball in grade school, but I was really tiny. So
yeah.
I was like the second shortest kid up until like 10th grade. So, sports were really not in my wheelhouse. Okay. I was almost a year younger than most kids in my grade. Cause I started school when I was really young. And, but I was always very physically fit and kind of, when it came to sports, I was pretty talented. But I never really went out for sports. I didn't really feel like it was my thing. A lot of it had to do with fear, honestly.
Huh.
I didn't think I would make it, and I didn't want to not make it.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. And
so you just wouldn't try out.
Yeah. I even had the football coach. I remember in high school, we had a gym class thing where we had to like throw a football and throw a softball. I had the starting quarterback of our football team was in my gym class, and I outthrew him. And the gym teacher actually came to me and said, hey, he was the football coach. He said,
yeah,
I want you to play football. And I said, no, thanks. I don't want to play football. It was all out of fear, that I wasn't going to be good enough or that I wasn't going to be able to do it. Or yeah.
When did you overcome that?
So in high school, I had a good friend of mine die tragically in a car accident. And he was a guy that he just loved life. Like, you couldn't help but want to be around Jim. He had this old beat up car, and we would use cigarette butts to hold the choke open, or otherwise it would stop running, and just, but we would go out and do fun stuff. And he just had a passion for life. And after he died, it really made me think. It started a process in me of thinking through, like, am I missing things in life because I'm not trying? Like, I'm not taking advantage of opportunities, or I'm afraid to fail, so I'm just not doing things. One of the biggest tests at that time was then applying for college. And I thought, I was always going to go to Penn State. That was my school. I'm from the East. I'm from Pittsburgh. So you mm-hmm. go to Penn State when you live in Pennsylvania, right? And through a series of events, I ended up just choosing to come out to Chicago and relocating at the ripe age of 17 to college. Yeah, I was 17 when I started college. And that was like a huge thing for me, like leave my home totally on my own.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I hadn't done anything that adventurous, ever in my life. And well, not ever, but like something of that significance.
Oh, that's huge.
Was
yeah.
huge for me, and that was just a confidence builder in me. And to say like I'm gonna be like Jim was, and I'm gonna go after things in life, and I'm gonna enjoy and try new things, and,
yeah.
and be adventurous and go and just go do it. And if I fail at it, then I fail at it.
Wow.
So. But to lead you back to the triathlon question, so what got me into that is, you know, I always thought like, you know, how old are you?
Me?
Yeah.
27.
Okay.
28?
So I was your age. I was still in pretty good shape. And then, you know, sat behind the desk for a few more years.
That'll do it.
And got pretty unhealthy. Believe it or not, I got up to just under 220 pounds, and I'm only... I'm barely 5'9". Mm-hmm. My wife's 5'9". I'm not quite 5'9".
Yeah.
So I was pretty bulky. Do you remember Jerome Bettis?
Yeah.
Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah. My niece, she was called the Bus, right? My niece at the time, she called me Uncle Bus by accident. And for a while it was funny, but then I was like, you know what? I kind of look like the Bus.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I'm kind of beefy. So I started this process of starting to exercise and to get back into shape and to lose weight. And in like 6 or 8 months, bought one of those Bowflexes, you know, did the Bowflex diet.
Sure.
And I got under 20, I dropped 20 pounds pretty quick. And then my wife did a triathlon shortly after that. And a couple of years later, I said, I want to try that. And
she did like what do they call it, an Olympic one?
No, it was just a sprint.
It was a short
distance, pretty short. And didn't know how to swim, and so she taught me how to swim like 5 times in a pool, and thought like, yeah, I'll go do this triathlon thing. And it was miserable. It was awful. I was dead last. I think I was dead last in the entire race.
Did they let you finish? Did you make
the time? They didn't let me finish. I threw up twice during the swim portion of the race.
Oh no.
I rode my mountain bike during the bike portion, which I had like 70-year-old guys like flying by me on their road bikes and triathlon bikes.
Oh, so yeah.
I was like just totally defeated. And then actually I missed it with multiple races going on that day. It's pretty funny. I actually missed the turnaround for my race and I ended up running twice as far as I should have anyway. So
oh no.
So yeah, finished dead last. And then a couple years later, and what I realized through that process and like through the process of getting out of shape, you know, which I thought I'd never do, right? Mm-hmm. You would ask me when I was 27. I said, no, I'll never get fat or whatever, you know. Is that I couldn't just say that, well, I'm going to work out, you know. I couldn't just say that.
Like, yeah.
I couldn't just create these, you know, these January 1st resolutions that die a couple weeks later.
Yeah.
I had to commit to something. I had to put something on the calendar. I had to make this real goal, mm-hmm. this very tangible thing that I had to work toward, and then pick a training program to follow that.
Yeah.
That's what I have to do. Like, yeah. That's why the Bowflex thing worked for me, because it had a program and a plan and I follow that. Like if I say I'm going to do this, like when I identify what that is, I will follow those steps to accomplish that.
Right.
And, so that's what I realized. So that's, you know, people ask like, oh, you do triathlons and Ironmans because you want to challenge yourself and that. And I'm like, no, honestly, it's mostly because I like dessert. But because I like dessert, I have to work out. And to work out, I have to be like very, very committed to certain things to keep me committed to exercising.
Yeah.
So it's really like a result of my necessity to stay healthy.
That's so funny.
And yeah, to be intentional about it.
That's crazy. Well, I mean, you mentioned being a man is never giving up.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a story where you're down and out, unless you just demolished each Ironman you did. I mean, throwing up in the water. I don't swim. I would like to do a triathlon. My cousin Alex and I are actually talking about training.
Let's do it.
But I'm like deathly afraid. I can swim, but not really.
Yeah, everybody thinks they can swim before they try to swim.
Oh, I have an idea that I can't swim. But like to throw up while I was swimming, I would freak out.
Well, the fun, the good, the good part about it is, so like in a triathlon, you can go swim in the pool and, you know, it's pretty comfortable, right?
Yeah. Well, because you could touch the bottom most
of the
time.
Yeah, in a triathlon, you usually can't see the bottom. You can't even see your arms in the water most of the time as you're swimming.
Yeah.
But there's, and then there's people all around you. Like, so it's a fine line between like a boxing match and actually swimming, you know, because you're fighting other people while you're trying to swim.
I hear people come out of that with like broken noses. And
I got kicked in the face once, got a busted nose. Yeah. Yeah, like 100 yards into my swim. Yeah. So
how do you overcome that? Because that's not only a fitness thing, but that's a mental. I mean, you get hit in the face, not in water, and you gotta figure out how to get over it. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like I was gonna tell you this little joke about the throwing up in the water situation. Is the good thing about it is when you start to like heave in the water, everybody that's around you gives you plenty of space. So
there you go.
So now I'm like, well, there's a benefit
it's
to
a
this.
Tactic, yeah.
So yeah. You know, that first triathlon, what I learned in that, especially in that, in all stages of the race, because, you know, I was going slow on the bike and I ran the wrong race on the run and was getting passed by people, and it's really just one step at a time. You know, what I learned in the water was, I mean, I was doggy paddling. I was barely just kind of getting through the water. I can't even think about the finish of this, because if I think about that, it's going to seem like it's too far, it's too hard, it's too difficult. But what I can think about is that next buoy that's out there that I can see. Mm-hmm. If I can make it to that buoy, then I can make it to the next buoy. And if I can get to the next buoy, and then if I get to the turnaround, now I'm halfway, and then I turn around and come back. So it's really just one piece at a time. You know, a good friend of mine, he came to our church one of the first years we had the marathon team with World Vision. And he was giving this talk. I don't know if you were there or not, but he was telling everybody, I got the secret to running a marathon. And he keeps going on and on and on. Everybody's like on the edge of their seats, like, when are you gonna tell us what the secret is? And he said, finally, he's like, okay, ready for the secret? And everybody's like, yeah. He said, just do the training. That's the secret to running the marathon. It's one step at a time. Do your workout today. Do your workout tomorrow. Do your workout on Saturday. Do your workout next week. Do it one step at a time. Do the training.
Yeah.
And the day that the race comes, you'll be able to run a marathon.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, that is. It's one step at a time.
That's what I had to do when I was training for it with you guys. Was you were just saying, like, follow the whatever it tells you.
Yeah.
It was like couch to marathon.
Yeah.
Plan, because yeah. I hated running.
Yeah.
I mean, the marathon was a struggle for me because I got shin splints like a week and a half before the race, so I couldn't do the taper.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I got to the marathon, it's like adrenaline's pumping. I sprinted the first 15 miles, and then that's it. I hit a wall, and I was like, "Oh shit!" But I just the back of my leg ended up tightening up, which I still have problems with. This was like 3 years ago. I still have problems from it. But I was going through, and I was crying, like ugly face crying, limping my way through, and I'm like, I'm not gonna not finish, you know?
Yeah.
Like it was just one of those things. And I think that's something I like put in my cookie jar of like when I'm feeling down or whatever. Like, dude, you finished a marathon that you should have been out in the 15th mile.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran 11 plus miles on one leg basically, and I didn't run. But I mean, the like you're saying, we're just kind of like, all right. I didn't look at it as 11 miles. I looked at it as, when is my leg going to fall off? I said, I told myself, and I was, my dad was there and my mom, and they would meet me every like 2 or 3 miles. And my dad's like, you better not quit. You know, like, and he's one of those guys that's like, he would rather see me walk around on one leg for the rest of my life than to see me give up.
You really think that's what it is?
100%. Well, 100%.
Because you really think that extreme of it. Like, I think... Or is he just,
I do.
I mean, I know you're.
I do. But you know why though? And that's something I want to instill in my kids too, where it's like, if I have kids is, you, like the mind, you can do so much more than you think you can. Because obviously I finished, I didn't lose my leg. It felt like I was going to, but even if I did, like if you quit, you have to live with that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like even if you have all the excuses, if you genuinely just quit, like, you have to live with that. And sometimes it's like, there's a doctor there and he's like, hey, if you go one more step, you're going to have a heart attack and die. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, calculate a risk. I don't want to die. But you still have to live with the fact that you got to that point. So like, you have to learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think unless it's not life threatening and you quit, like for me, at least, that's not something that I can live with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And even growing up when I would start, let's say soccer, right? And I was like, I shouldn't have done this. I didn't want to play it. I had to finish that season.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, because it's like you start something, you finish it.
Yeah.
I think as men, for me at least, and you brought it up too, the never giving up, it has shaped, it helped my confidence. And when I was going through a period where my confidence was super low, if I recall going back to there, I was quitting everything I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, okay, I'd go to the gym every day for like 10 days and be like, all right, I'm done.
Mm.
Even though I had specific goals, I didn't reach them. I'm done.
Mm. Mm.
There was a time I was doing a speech in class. Just walked out.
Really?
Just walked out of the speech. I had like a little bit of a panic, which is normal, whatever. Your public speaking is a fear. And I just left. And I sat on the stairs and I was just like so pissed at myself that I left.
Mm.
And to this day, I live with it. To this day, it'll just pop in my head. And I want to go back to that class. I want to apologize to my partners. And I want to like somehow make it right, but I can't.
Yeah. Yeah. But how much more, sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to highlight that is like, how much more is the pain of regret over the pain of failure in those instances? It's one thing to go to the point where, I mean, yeah, I don't think there's ever been a race that I've started that I haven't finished. There's been some races that I started that I was not doing well, and I knew it was going to be a really rough race. But there have been workouts that I've started that I was like, something isn't right. Like, I don't feel well. I feel sick. Like, I need to go home and rest. Or, like, there's a point where you have to listen to your body and you get to understand. And when you do long distance stuff like that, you experienced it with the marathon, is you get to learn, you learn certain things about your body and how you feel much more specifically than the average person that never experiences that stuff. So there, when you get into that health risk side of it, that's a whole different story, right? You're not quitting. You're not putting yourself in a really bad situation and like permanently injuring yourself or worse, you know, killing yourself. But how much worse is the pain of guilt over the pain of failure?
Yeah. Oh, I look back at it all the time. And like I said, I was sitting there by myself on the stairs. And I had gone up to like the second story of the staircase. And I could hear the people walking out of the class whispering, going, oh my, I wonder if he's okay. I wonder what happened. Like, what was it? And that was like the talk of the class. Because I just walked out of my speech and it was so embarrassing. But I left because I was embarrassed at the time that I had like a moment of panic. I wasn't even panicking. I had a moment of panic. I forgot what I was supposed to say, which in the past I'd usually be like, guys, I completely forgot what I was going to say. Let me like pull out my notes and just like own it.
Yeah.
But instead I left. Yeah. And like to this day, I'm like, man, that's something that just, I would rather have. So one of my fears is like passing out or throwing up in public. And it's just one of my fears.
I've never done it, but it's
a fear.
I haven't really thought about that, but yeah, that seems pretty legitimate.
But that, like, honestly, looking back, I say I would rather have passed out or thrown up than to feel what I feel today about that moment.
Mm. Yeah, because in that instance, you had no choice in the matter, right? It was something that happened to you. You know, what happened to you in that instant was by your choice,
right?
You know, and that's that regret, that regret and guilt that you feel in it. And yeah. And that's why going back to my friend Jim, that's what I think was most value about that. What I learned from him in the years following that is that I'd rather not live with that regret. I'd rather live with the failure, and through the failure, learning, and the next time doing it better or accomplishing that goal or whatever that is, and eventually succeeding. And that is so much more what life is about, and the brilliance of life, and then sitting in our regret of those things.
Regret,
man, walking away from it. Let's face those things.
Yeah. Well, I think too, and that has to do with, I mean, that could be a man and woman thing, but
absolutely.
As men, I think you introduced me to the book, but it's Wow That Hard, or I always mess up the title.
Yeah.
But it's Do We Have What It Takes?
Yeah.
I think as men, we do need to step up, challenge ourselves, don't give up. And then even if you do fail, by continuing on and finishing, you're going to learn. If you just stop when things start to suck, then you're not really going to learn what went wrong. Mm-hmm. But like by finishing that marathon for me, I learned, okay, this is what I need to do better next time. Because that's
don't sprint the first 15 miles.
Right. Right. Russ, we sprinted them. Like, dead on sprint.
Bad idea.
Our pace group was like well behind us. They ended up finishing before me.
I'm sure they passed you at some point. Just like, hey, that guy was with us before.
Yeah. I saw him at the start line. But but to go through that failure, that crappy moment, you do learn, and then you can be better next time or whatever. And then just by not giving up, by finishing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so much sweeter.
And I think it's a very key thing to defining men. It separates men from boys and adolescent young men, is that just that will to keep going and that, you know, taking it to the next level. Like when you come, I think Tony Evans talks about this in Kingdom Man, he talks about, you know, just those stages of life. And, you know, we all go through that. We're all boys. We're all adolescents, you know, we're all young men. I forget, there's some different authors that talk about it in different ways, but really kind of the same thing. And then, you know, kind of becoming that true man is, you know, yeah, we'd rather fail at something than walk away from it. I mean, how many times you see a young kid these days, a young boy, try something and be like, no, and then he just leaves and quits.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't like that, or I'm not going to be good at that, or I don't even want to try it because I'm afraid that I'm not going to be good at it, or I'm not going to succeed, or I don't want to fail at it.
Right.
You know, they just don't do it, you know. And if we carry that on, you know, in our older years of life, we never become men.
Yeah.
We'll never become men.
Well,
we'll be 40-year-old boys.
It sounds like in your early years, you went through that, and then you had, like, a tragic event happen. You found the silver lining and a blessing in it where it changed your life around. But imagine going through life not doing anything because you just think you're going to fail and it's going to suck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You wouldn't be in Chicago. You wouldn't be, you know, doing anything that you do. You wouldn't have said you completed two Ironman, you know, like, but like you said, that's a maturity, a growing point that distinguishes the boys from the men.
Yeah.
That's great. That's a good distinction.
Mm.
Cool. So what's left? Adventure and yoking. So what's like adventure? What do you see as a necessary adventure for men?
So I think adventure should include a couple different things. Was it last year? 2 years ago. We went out, my wife and I went out with some friends out to Glacier National Park.
I'm getting married there.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, excellent. What's the weather like going to be there?
It's warmer than it is here. I think it's like upper 30s and feet of snow.
Does Glacier have a... like sentimental value for you guys there?
No, we like the mountains.
Oh, there's some mountains there.
Yeah, that's it. We like the mountains, and Denver was too expensive to do a wedding.
Okay.
So,
Yeah, that's
Glacier.
What
happened in Glacier for you?
Well, before we went, we asked each other, like, what are y'all looking forward to? And I told them, I said, an awful cup of coffee every morning. And they're like, an awful? Like, you want bad coffee? And I said, no, I want awful. Like, I want to be sitting there staring at the wilderness and staring at the mountains with my cup of coffee in my hand every morning. Adventure, I think, you know, we definitely want, and I desire personally, to anything that's new and exciting and different experiences. I mean, I love the outdoors. I grew up hunting and fishing. I love to fly fish. It's one of my passions. And, you know, as a younger man, I would love to go out and, you know, fly fish and catch as many fish as possible. Like, that was the adventure.
Yeah.
And today it's just as much like I can get up in the morning and have a good cup of coffee and look outside, or get out of my tent and just stretch and see the mist on the water. And, you know, whether it's a view of the mountains or it's a view of a stream or just sitting on the shore, just watching my dad fly fish with butterflies flying around them. Like that, all of that is adventure.
Yeah.
It doesn't always have to be this action-packed thing. And I think we do need to encourage men to take some time and relax and sit and enjoy. And that's all part of the adventure.
Yeah.
You know, we have to reflect on that stuff as well.
Sounds like
feed our souls.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Getting out of your box, getting out of your day to day.
Yeah.
Going out doesn't have to be jumping off a cliff and
base
jumping or
anything. I love that stuff too.
Yeah. but yeah, the purest adventure would be just getting out of your element and soaking it in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And if it's hiking, if it's sitting, if it's whatever,
mm-hmm.
you can bungee jump and stuff if you want, but
yeah,
the adventure of just soaking in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess part of it is like, you know, like bungee jump, for instance, or like a, you know, like a great hike to a mountaintop, right? The goal is the mountaintop, but you got a long way to go from the base to there. So like, don't ignore that stuff.
Yeah.
Don't ignore everything along the path of that. That's all part of the adventure, you know? You know, like marriage, for instance, you're getting married soon.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, marriage isn't the end. That day that you get married is the beginning. That's the beginning of your adventure. And I think as men, I think we tend to, especially these cultural norms that we have, we tend to, well, we're married now and, you know, that's it. No, absolutely not. We need to cherish our wives and explore and be adventurous and be exciting with them on a daily basis. You know, marriage is the start of that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think adventure fall into many aspects of life. It's a matter of what we do with the things at hand.
Interesting. So almost like what was the word I was thinking? It's almost like taking the day, because even if you can't get out of your element, let's say, but
mm-hmm.
you're able to see, like, I'm getting married, right? And that mm-hmm. that beginning of an adventure of growing together, of developing together, of experiencing things together, that would be the adventure. So creating like a sense of wonder almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's no excuse not to have adventure in your life.
There is none.
Even if you can't get to the mountains or the bungee jumping.
No.
You can make adventure just by approaching whatever you're doing with wonder and curiosity and
cool. Yeah. Something fun, new, interesting, you know, whether it's, you know, cooking a new dish in the kitchen together and dancing with your wife, you know, in the kitchen while you're doing that. Like, hey, that's whatever.
There's something to be said, too, that it's like, it's out of your element because it's more in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we're not really in the moment a lot.
Yeah, we're not. Yeah, we're always thinking about
the future or
the
past.
Next thing or how do we got to get to that vacation?
Yeah.
You know, like, that's the mountaintop. It's the vacation, right?
Yeah.
But everything else in it, like, we just work hard and just blow by every day, and it just seems miserable. And I'm not great at it, trust me. I mean, I go through my days and just like, I got to get all this done today. And then, you know, the end of the day comes, like, what did I do?
What happened? Where did the day go?
Yeah, just, you know, like, you lose them. So you won't get that time back. But,
I mean,
I think adventure can be big and small.
Yeah.
You know, and we shouldn't blow by any of those things.
Well, I like that because a lot of the times when people are like, oh, you're getting married, like, oh, good luck, you know, or whatever. And it's we've been getting a lot of not negative feedback. Everyone's like, oh, it's marriage is great, but it sucks, you know. Like,
it does. That's awful advice. I think marriage is awesome and it is what you make it.
Yeah.
You gotta be intentional about it. Like, you know. You know, I mean, you started this podcast and you intentionally invite men that you respect and you like to come in here and talk to you. Like, you're intentional about that. You're going to make a great thing out of this. You know, you just didn't say, well, I'm going to start a podcast and then do one of them and then, you know,
that's
it. And then quit.
Yeah.
Or like, not quit, but just,
let
okay, now what? You know, like that would be, you know, like your marriage, you know, you get married that day, go on your honeymoon and then just kind of be like, okay. Well, we're married now.
Yeah.
No, you know, you gotta keep asking and learning more about your spouse and engaging them. And I'm not the shining image of all of this.
No, but just the fact that that's your mindset, though. Because I'm telling you,
it's more my mindset. It wasn't, you know.
Right. Well, it's good to hear.
5 years ago, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, for me, it's good to hear because honestly, all the advice I'm getting is, oh, it's great, and you love more than you ever could and stuff. But it's always like, but. it's negative, you know, like it's not, but it's good for young men like myself who are getting married, who are thinking about getting married, who are just newly married. Make it an adventure. Make it. It is what you make of it.
It is. It absolutely is.
Oh, so. Thank you for saying that. Yeah. Liz is going to be excited to hear that. we get frustrated. We're like, what are we doing? Why does anybody get married?
But think about it. Like, I've been to your house for the pizzas, you know, right? Like, think about it as like that. Like, you guys make all this dough, and I still think back to that night. I was there a few months back. I don't know. You had like 100 pounds of pizza dough on a countertop. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. But just imagine if you only had like one topping to put on that.
Yeah.
Like, we had like 12 pizzas on the table that night, all different toppings. And like, that was an adventure.
Yeah.
Like, I will not forget that night. Like, I mean, Dawn likes making homemade pizzas, but wow, that was something. Like, that was a crazy adventure for us. For you guys, that seems like it's the norm.
Yeah.
But imagine if you only had pepperoni.
Yeah.
I wouldn't remember that night very much. Like, we got like, we had 100 pounds of pizza dough. We had, you know, pepperoni. It was it. It wasn't really much.
There was like 1,000 pepperoni pizzas then. Like, that was memorable, I guess. But
That's
good. I needed to hear that. Definitely needed to hear that.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, it's, you know, my wife and I do a little premarital mentoring with people. And I've told them over and over again, it's, you know, divorce is so prominent. It really is. It's an accepted cultural norm now. The unfortunate thing is, I mean, I've seen people go through divorce. It takes a lot more work and energy and pain and suffering to go through divorce than it does if you were just to put effort into your marriage. It takes a lot less work and effort to make your marriage strong than it does take to ruin it and end it. So I'm not telling you it's the easy way out, but it's much easier to have a healthy marriage than it is to go through a divorce.
Yeah.
So it's kind of crazy.
So let's just stick with this. We got 10 minutes left. Sure. Yoke me on marriage.
Yoke you on marriage.
Well, because, I mean, not that I'm excited. If you asked me like a year ago, when we were dating, I'd be like, maybe not. It scares the crap out of me. But now I'd say I'm really confident. But I could definitely use some advice, some manly advice getting into a marriage. Yoke me.
Well, I'm pretty confident that you have numerous men around you that have healthy and thriving marriages for many years.
Yeah.
So I know
I got good examples.
You got some good examples around you. You know, my dad and my mom, they're still married. They've been married for, oh goodness, many years. So, right around 50. Oh, I got to look at that. Yeah. Wow. And as good of a marriage as they've had, I could see it growing up that, you know, my mom desired more intimacy and connectivity with my dad. And my dad was pretty playing with emotions, and you know, even when we got older, when my brother and I were able to drive, and I'm not knocking my dad, I love him to death, you know, he used to have me and my brother go buy my mom her Christmas gifts and go or buy her Christmas presents and stuff. He didn't even put that effort into it, and I always told myself, I said, I'm not gonna treat my wife like that, because I could see my mom wanted more, but that was how their relationship functioned.
Yeah.
And what's really awesomely amazing is my dad's not like that anymore.
Really?
His heart has totally changed. I don't know if it was the grandchildren or what, but, you know, he cares for my mom. He's my mom's primary caregiver now. And he gets frustrated and he gets angry. He's got a short temper, and she can be challenging, definitely challenging. But, man, he loves her in a way that I've never seen before. And it's awesome to see. And I think like part of the yoking part of that is surround yourself with guys that are for their wives, and that you know will take care of their wives, and that love and even in those moments where I would encourage you, in those moments where guys will talk the guy talk, you know, and say, oh, you know, my wife this, my wife that. You don't have to tell them that they're wrong. You don't have to prove something to them. But I've had it happen to me a few times where I'll just interject into that conversation. I'll say, you know, yeah, my wife, and they'll like look at me, you know, like they're ready for me to say something negative about my wife, mm-hmm. you know, like, you know, the griping husband, like, man, you know, man, she packs me lunch almost every day for work. It's so awesome. You know, I'll just say something like totally glorifying about my wife. And then they kind of get it. They, a lot of times the guys will just look at you, or they'll make fun of you. They'll be like, oh, whatever, man, you know, or, you know, there's, you know, they'll be the guys, the macho type of over-masculine, emasculine dude, you know, and, or they'll just kind of sit there and kind of just think about it for a second. Like, yeah, I shouldn't be ragging on my wife and I should be more honoring. And yeah, my wife is actually pretty good. You know, it makes them think a little bit. And so I would encourage you in that. And that's the oaking part. Like, surround yourself with guys that are that can be those examples, which I know you have plenty around.
Mm-hmm.
And lean into that. And when you hear that negative stuff, like, throw a bit of truth in there, you know? Just layer some truth on top of that,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like, tell them how great your wife is. Make them jealous of you if you have to. Like, just shower her in front of those guys. So,
well, I think... Yeah. I don't know if it's happened before, but I feel like as men, we're kind of competitive. If I was just always talking good about my wife, then I feel like sooner or later, the guys would be like, yeah, well, my wife is, she makes the bed every day.
Yeah.
She's
absolutely.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then they're talking good.
That yeah. Could be a yeah. Good change the conversation. Like we said before, we got to change the conversation about that stuff. So let's not fall into those traps of that negativity. And it's easy for me. I've always focused on the negative. I mean, goodness, that's, you know, you talked about the sports thing earlier. Like, I wasn't good enough. I can't do it. I don't want to fail. Like, it was all negative beliefs, you know. But let's not fall into that. Let's strive for the good and positive in this world. I mean, it's what God created us for, you know. He wants us to work towards that, you know, not fall into the lies and the evil of it.
I read a book, just finished it a couple weeks ago. It's called... I'm terrible with names. It was called The Complaint-Free World by Will Bowen.
Mm.
It's a 21-day challenge to be complaint-free, so not to complain. No spoken complaints, because you're going to think whatever you speak, you're going to think more of, so it's hard to make that transition. But basically, what I got out of it was kind of like what you're saying was, we have everything to complain about. We can complain about anything if we want to, but there's also, we can glorify everything. We can talk. Mm-hmm. We can find the good in everything.
Yeah.
So when it comes to your work or your friends or your wife or whatever, find what's good, speak that, and just see how your world is going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that I've tried to focus on more is like, yeah, Liz does stuff that bothers me. I do stuff that bothers her. But when we speak to each other, we make sure that we speak highly of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And like we hear people griping about their significant others, and it's like, I never want to be that person.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to spend the rest of my life with this woman.
Yeah.
Why would I want to focus on what she does wrong?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's like, that seems normal now.
It does. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it goes back to that everybody's a, you know, a victim or offended by something. I mean, you know what happens when you're offended? Exactly. Nothing.
Nothing
happens. It's just, it's just a feeling you have. Absolutely nothing happens when you're offended. Yeah. So, you know,
we're kind of off topic, but like, I remember growing up not too long ago where it was I'd be like, oh, so-and-so said this about me or whatever. My mom would be like, sticks and stones break your bones. Words will never hurt you.
Yeah.
And now it's like words are violence.
Yeah.
And it's like words can cause death almost. And it's like, guys, let's take a step back.
Yeah. Especially as men, like we've lost, you know, culturally we're being told to lose that grit part of it. That like we should be offended by that and we should be upset by that. Like, no, who cares really? Like, say what you want. I'm not even going to give you the time of day.
Yeah.
You know, we should just be able to bypass that stuff and turn it right on its head. And focus on the positive things of it.
I was listening to a comedian. His dad was from like Lebanon or something, and he was saying how he would go to work every day, and every day they would call him a camel jockey or whatever. And his son would go to work, and he would listen to these guys call his dad a camel jockey, and he's like getting pissed. The son's getting pissed. He's like, man, I want to beat these guys up. And the dad's like, just keep going. Like, don't worry about it. And he's like, for 27 years, you've let these people call you camel jockey and whatever. He's like, there's not even camels in Lebanon. You know? He's like, these guys are idiots. I go there at work. I put food on the table. Like, who cares what they say? But it was a funny joke, but it's such a powerful message where it's like, we're so outraged with everything, and our focus is on being outraged and being a victim, but life goes on, and we're not living life, and we're not developing as men or developing characteristics of what it means to be a great man or helpful or a better neighbor or a better husband, whatever, because everyone else is offended, and I'm offended, and everything's offended, that we're not even focusing on how do we get better.
Yeah.
Where when I used to get bullied, exactly. As a kid, I was always a small one too.
Yeah.
And my mom's like, whatever. If they say it, whatever. Don't. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just saying stuff. And then I would bully people too. Like, I was quick on my feet when it come to words and talking smack. But then I sit back and I'm like, well, thank God that my friends didn't get offended, because I'd have no friends. But it's like, it just happens. But my friendships are great, you know? And
Every time we subject ourselves to those negative thoughts, whether it's somebody influencing us or attacking or just saying crazy things, right? You know, when we start releasing our joy, we're actually, in a way, giving that person control. We're allowing that person to control our emotional life, which isn't, you know, giving them a piece of our life.
Yeah.
And we're giving them a piece of our happiness.
Yeah.
We're letting them rob our joy and happiness by even giving their words or their crazy thoughts, you know, whatever it may be, any type of validity. But even acknowledging it, we're allowing them to control us and to rob our joy.
Yeah.
And I think that we need to take that back. As men, we need to step up and definitely take that back and say, I'm not going to let you rob my joy. You can belittle your wife all you want by making crazy comments about her and talking smack about her.
But you're not going there.
And I am not going to dive into that. And in fact, I'm going to say the total opposite.
Yeah.
And I'm going to lift her up and tell you how awesome she is.
So, that's awesome. That's awesome. All right, Russ, we're at an hour.
Excellent.
That was awesome.
That was quick.
Just to recap, manly. No offense to the other guests, but I like this for me. I like structured answers. Manly. M, manly. Adventure. Never give up. Love. Yoke. I think that's a pretty good. That's pretty good advice. All right. Well,
thank you.
Definitely a lot of value here. I think people will get a lot out of this. And thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was a wonderful time. And Vito, I appreciate you and your entire family.
You guys
have treated us like we've been family. So
thank you.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
Cool.
Thank you.
Cool.